Welcome to Chat Shit Get Well episode 15. I'm here with Lorraine today and we're going to be talking about fibro, hypermobility and her weight loss journey. I said fibro right and I said hypermobility but I didn't say journey.
Journey, the easiest word out of the whole lot.
I've tried to practice those words as well because I can't do the full length version of fibro.
But fibromyalgia.
That's the one, yeah. It's a lot of words.
Syllables,
that's the one. Anyway.
Hi.
So today we're going to talk to you because obviously me and Lorraine started working together recently.
We have.
And obviously I've heard about Lorraine's story, so I thought it'd be really, really beneficial to share with people how you were diagnosed and how that affected and how you've sort of overcome your diagnosis and what tools you've used.
Okay. So if we start at the beginning, which is probably about after I had my fourth child. So she's nearly 10. So after I had my third child, who's 12, I didn't really pick up, but I just thought, oh, okay, I'll put on a bit of weight with my pregnancy. I'm really, really tired. I'm just an older mum. And then I had my fourth child and I just really didn't pick up at all. I couldn't pick up my daughter from her cot. I felt like I was going to drop her. My weight just went on and on and on. And I went to the doctors, like you do, because you think, and they go, oh, you know, might be a bit of baby blues. You might just be a bit run down. You might be a bit anemic. Did all those tests. Then they came to me and said, oh, we want to try on some steroids because it might be like rheumatoid arthritis or something like that. Did a course of steroids that made me balloon again.
Yeah.
Said, oh, that's not working. We'll take you off them. I was like, cheers. I'm now like another 3 stone heavier.
Yeah. So you're like gaining weight really fast at this point. Yeah.
And then they said to me, well, we're not sure what's wrong. Have some painkillers.
Right.
I was like...
So were your symptoms were weight gain and chronic pain?
Weight gain and chronic pain to start with. And then I was just getting like brain fog. You heard of brain fog? Like where you just cannot think straight. And it's like a cloud come over your brain. Mm-hmm. And you know what you want to say, but you can't find the word. Or you know how to do something, like your everyday jobs and stuff. And you just can't function. And then that would lift and it would disappear. And I'd be like, oh, that's a bit weird. Mm. I felt like my joints were burning, that my muscles were on fire. And I weren't doing anything other than just being a mum.
Yeah.
You know, nothing that I hadn't done before. Nothing, I hadn't changed anything. My diet had always been fairly good, you know, eat quite healthy. It was just that. And the tiredness, it's not even like being tired. It's fatigue. It's full-on exhaustion.
Yeah.
When you haven't really done that much. I had never even heard of fibro. So the doctor kept saying, oh, well, we'll check in next week or come back in a few weeks if you're still the same. It might be a virus. It might be this, that and the other. And then they said to me, we'll refer you. And then we're talking 2 years down the line. So for 2 years I've been like this.
Yeah.
Gaining weight, losing my mobility, feeling really rubbish.
Yeah.
Went to see a rheumatologist and they use like a pressure point pain scale and they poke you in different places all over your body. And she was like, yeah, you have fibromyalgia. I was like, right.
What's that?
What's that?
Yeah.
And she was like, it's, you know, you just feel pain. Fibromyalgia is pretty much... when they can't put it down to anything else, there's no test for it.
Yeah.
As yet, but there's studies into it. And they said, yeah, you've got that. Here, have lots of painkillers and go away.
Wow.
That was it. And so I went home.
That's it, yeah, and your life's over. You're just going to be on paid meds.
Just thinking,
yeah.
What am I going to do? Okay, yeah. I've got this. And then the rheumatologist said to me, how long have you been hypermobile? When were you diagnosed? I said, I haven't been diagnosed. What are you on about?
Yeah. Didn't even know.
Didn't even know. And that's a whole separate condition.
Yeah.
But one can flare off the other.
Okay. So are they linked?
I think mine is linked.
Yeah.
Fibromyalgia is different for everybody.
Right, okay.
Symptoms are different for everybody.
Yeah.
Different triggers.
Yeah.
For different people. So there's no, you can't just say you have this and you're all going to be the same. And
you all have the same symptoms, yeah.
It's all different.
What are the other symptoms of fibro?
So some people get... upset stomachs, like an IBS kind of thing. Some people get stiffness in their joints. Some people get full body pain, headaches, dizziness. You can get like this brain fog.
Yeah.
Where you just can't, and you just cannot you can't function as a person.
Yeah.
And extreme fatigue is massive, but the pain is like something that you've never experienced unless you've had it.
Yeah.
Like there's a loads of pictures on social media and stuff where people have literally used makeup artists to show what it looks like if you could see it, because you can't see fibro.
Yeah.
And it is literally looks like you've been in a car crash.
Wow.
So if you imagine all the like the bone points of your like elbows, your shoulders, all your spine, if that's all black and blue full of bruises, you can imagine what that must feel like.
Yeah.
But there's nothing there to show for it. No. It literally feels like you've been hit by a truck.
Yeah, that must be really, really challenging every day to deal with that.
It is really challenging. And
I think it gets, obviously it gets palmed off as other things quite easily and undiagnosed. And there isn't a cure for it.
There isn't a cure. You know, there's not anything that you can't just take tablets and hope that's going to help you. They might, they did with me. They sent me to the pain clinic, which there is a massively long waiting list for nowadays. And to be honest, I did three sessions of the six sessions that they offered me, because it was, in my opinion, it felt like it was just a waiting room full of people that were competing on how much meds they were taking and how much pain they were in.
Right, okay.
And that wasn't helpful to me.
No. What would that, I mean, what would they do at a pain clinic? Is it just trying to find more medication that works for you?
That was one of the things. Yeah. They were talking to me about, you know, is your medication right? Do we need to up your dose?
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want to be taking bottlefuls of medication.
No.
The side effects of those medications is probably worse than my fibro, to be fair.
Yeah. And the long-term effects
of that are crazy.
Like that. Yeah.
Absolutely crazy. You know, there's some of them, if you're on them long-term, they actually give you more pain.
Yeah.
So then you don't know whether it's fibro pain.
Some of the medication that's out there is crazy when you read
that's
the side effects.
And fibro, it can come in waves. I could have months and months where I don't have a flare-up, and then I could have a few months where that's it. Every couple of weeks, it'll hit me.
Oh, okay. So it comes
but that's
in...
that's my fibro.
So it's, yeah, so you can have it where it's not constant. It comes and goes. Okay, so, well, I didn't know that.
So, for example, one of my friend's husbands has fibro. In the winter months, he's much better.
Okay.
He's better in cooler temperatures. He's not good in the heat. Obviously, you know the heat we've had recently in the last few years. Mm. It's literally putting him in bed.
Wow.
Like, and with me, colder months are what kicks me off.
Yeah.
Like I literally feel like I'm frozen, but my muscles are on fire.
Oh, wow. That's a really strange sensation.
It is a horrible sensation. And it's like, feels like crawling, creeping, kind of, it attack, like sets my nerves off.
So do they think it's nerve damage? Is it sort of a nerve problem, fibro?
No, so it's a nervous system kind of issue.
Okay.
Where your pain gateway is open all the time. So if you were to knock your leg on the chair, for example, as you got up, you go, oh, God, that hurt, and your body would send that pain signal to your brain, and then it would give it a rub, it would be fine, it will wear off. If I was to do it and I was in a flare-up, it would reverberate like a tuning fork.
Right.
And that pain would just go, and it would last a really long time.
Right, okay.
So
that's
kind of, it amplifies pain signal. Also, that gateway is open all the time. So my body is telling my brain that there's an injury and it's painful, but there is no injury, but the pain signal is real. It's a real thing.
Yeah.
But there's nothing that's caused it.
Okay.
And it's learning how to shut that pain signal off that has helped me.
Okay. And their idea of shutting the pain signal off was
is to feed me with drugs.
Right, okay. So did you take the drugs? Did you take the painkillers and stuff like that?
Yeah, I did start with, because I didn't know
any
different.
You had no options,
I had no other option, didn't have any difference. I was like going to the experts, going, you know, I know nothing about this.
Yeah.
You're telling me what I need to do. They kept telling me that I needed to lose weight. Well, I knew that.
Yeah. And at this point, how much weight had you gained?
At my heaviest, I was 24 stone, about 100. I think my top weight, I was probably about 151 kilos. But when I actually got weighed at the hospital, I was 149.
Jeez.
So, yeah. And that has its own issue.
From what weight had you gone from?
I'd gone from about 13 stone, 14 stone. So I gained a good 10, 11 stone.
In such a short amount of time?
Yeah, in about 4 or 5 years.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that isn't even from overeating or anything. It's just your body is just
My body was broken, yeah. It just was not, the systems weren't functioning together well enough.
Wow. Yeah,
it was horrendous.
I mean, when you're at that point as well and you're just told you take your pain medication, you just kind of, I suppose, feel like you'd given up, really. I suppose you're just like, what do I do now?
Because they're giving me pain medication that, one, is completely knocking me out at night time. So I wasn't even having proper sleep, like restorative sleep. I was just being knocked out by the pain meds. Then I can't wake up in the morning, I can't function. So my husband was having to do the school runs because there's no way I could have walked to school.
Yeah.
He would do that. By that time, I'd get up and, you know, it'd be about lunchtime and I'm just kind of like coming around from this drug-induced sleep. And then I might eat something. And then by the time I've washed and dressed, that's it, I'm done.
Yeah.
I've got no energy for anything else, let alone, you know, then my kids come home from school and they're all like, oh, mummy, I did this, mummy, I did that. Can we do
something?
There's
nothing left in the tank at that point.
No. Like taking my kids trick-or-treating, I could do that.
Yeah. All those things that you take for granted as a parent, just literally taken away from you because you're immobile at that point.
Yeah, I did get immobile. Yeah. Like towards the point before I decided that's it, I've had enough.
Mm.
I was immobile. You know, my husband was having to help me wash, which you do for your partner, you know, if they're ill and they need it. But I did not expect him to have to help me to wash. My daughter was having to help me wash my hair because I couldn't lift my arms enough to be able to wash my own hair. You know, I couldn't go up my stairs in my house in one go.
Yeah.
It was literally a few steps at a time. You know, I was spending probably 3 days out of the week in bed. That's existing. That's
it's
not
existing.
Living.
Existing, yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, and I was like mid-30s.
So sad. It's way too young to feel that strain, isn't it? And also the family as well, you know, your kids and your husband.
No one really, they say they understand and they're like, oh my God, you know, I feel for you. But unless you have any condition with chronic pain and fatigue, you ain't got a clue.
You never understand it, no.
No.
So how did you feel when you got the diagnosis? Did you feel like relieved you had a diagnosis? Were you frustrated? Were you like...
A bit of a mixture of emotion, really. I was like, okay, so we know what it is. And then when I said, so now what?
Yeah.
Expecting either...
An answer.
An answer.
Yeah.
But I wasn't. I wasn't given any information. Mm. No information whatsoever.
Do you think... I've done it again. I've just got mocker on my face. Do you think that's because it's such a new... Well, it's not new. I mean, how long has it even been around, the diagnosis? It's definitely become more known of in the last few years.
I think it's because more people talk about it now.
Yeah, there's more awareness. Well, that's what social media is great for. At least people are able to talk about it because it wasn't really known about before.
But you do feel so isolated, like you're the only one.
Yeah, and you must have felt like you were going crazy.
Yeah, I literally did. There was one point before I had my diagnosis that I remember standing in my living room with my husband and he'd helped me out of the sofa and I just stood there and I couldn't support my own legs. And he was like, you're right. I was like, no. And I just burst into tears. I was like, what is wrong with me?
Yeah.
Because
it must be terrifying.
I'm thinking, am I imagining it? Am I just lazy? Am I, what's going on? But I know I'm not like that. That's not the sort of person I am.
You don't choose to be lazy like that. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't a choice. It was taken from you.
Well, I did adventure training before I had my kids. You know, I was always active. I helped out with army cadet instructors.
So you're always a physical fit person and stuff. So do you think the last pregnancy triggered something?
Fibro can be caused by a lot of things.
Yeah.
It can be caused by trauma, not just physical trauma, but mental trauma.
Okay.
It can be viral, like an illness. If you've had an illness, you can end up with fibro.
Yeah.
If you've had accident.
So attack on the immune system.
Attack on the immune system. Yeah. Just general illness can cause fibro or an amalgamation of all of those things.
So it can literally come at any point of your life. And one thing you said as well, your friend's husband, I actually didn't know that men get diagnosed.
Yeah.
Does that make you feel stupid? Yeah. I mean, stupid?
No, not at all. Why would you?
Because most people that I know that have had it have been, well, all women, all of them have been women. I didn't know that men can be diagnosed.
It's the same old adage, isn't it? A lot of men don't talk about it. A lot of men don't go to the doctors.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah.
I believe from what she's told me is he got quite a deep infection.
Right.
And once that took a very long time to clear with abscess and stuff. And once that had gone, that's what triggered his.
Right. Okay.
He's been years and years.
So does it have any problem? Do you have any problems with healing? If you had an injury, would that take longer to heal because of the fibro or not?
The injury doesn't take, for me, the injury doesn't take longer to heal, but the the sensations last longer. So I had my knee operated on. I had to have my meniscus tear repaired and trimmed up. And it did take a little bit longer for the pain to subside and for like the sensations.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Like an afterburn.
Yeah. But the actual healing of that knee.
The physical side of it.
Yeah, was fine for me.
Yeah. So what happened? What made you start looking in other ways? Obviously the doctors weren't giving you the right answers.
I literally felt like I'd been told, you know, this is your lot.
Yeah.
There's your stuff. We'll give you a diagnosis, have some pills on you go with it. And I was like, there's got to be more to it. And they just, every time, I think the thing was, every time I went to a GP about something, it was always, oh, well, that could be your fibro. Or it could be, well, that's because you're overweight.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, like I damaged my knee before I was diagnosed with fibro and before I'd put the weight on. And I'd been trying to get help with it, okay? And I know a lot of people out there will have this, when they go to the doctor, the first thing they go is, oh, you need to lose 3 pounds.
Yeah.
Right? No one ever looks at the cause of things. They just see that as a reason to push you away.
Yeah.
And so that was done beforehand. And then, so all the way through this, I was having more and more issues with my knee, which was making me more immobile, which again was making me put on more weight. So it's this cycle started happening when nobody would give me the treatment that I needed. So I was like, right, okay, everyone keeps telling me that all of this pain is probably due to my weight. Right, I'm going to do something about it. Because I was like, I don't want to be asleep for 10 hours a day, like in the daytime as well as at nighttime. I want to be able to function. I want to be able to do things with my kids without going, actually, mummy's not having a very good day today, go and ask daddy. Mm. You know, we all want that. For our kids, you know,
A young age as well.
And then when I got two older children that, you know, at the time they were like 13 and 17, I think they were, they ended up caring for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no mum.
You expect to do it for your parents when you're like, I'm 47 now, when you're older, you expect to look after your parents. Not when they're in their teenage years, having to come home from school and do dinner because I can't do it, or, you know, look after the little ones and clear up because I can't do it. That's no way to live.
Yeah.
Not in my, I weren't happy with that.
So you're dealing with a lot of guilt as well, as well as being very sick. Yeah.
That's horrendous.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But I sat there, I was like, I was nearly 40. I was like, right, potentially, if I have a fairly good length of life, I could be like this for the next 40 years.
Yeah.
I was like, do I want to sit in a chair on drugs, prescribed?
Being cared for.
For 40 years.
Yeah.
I was like, nah.
No.
I need to find another option. So, like I said, everyone was telling me, it's because of your weight. Move more. Eat less. Oh, I fucking hate that sentence.
Oh, yeah, I bet. Because when you physically can't move more, how are you meant to lose weight? Yeah.
And if you've got half a stone to lose, you're fairly fit, quite healthy, changing a little bit of your diet, putting out a little bit more energy, brilliant. That'll probably work. You know, that will work.
Yeah.
But when you have a chronic pain condition or any disability, physical or mental, just telling someone, oh, just go for an extra walk. I couldn't walk up my stairs.
Yeah.
I couldn't walk from my living room to my kitchen. I literally would sit in an office chair to go from the washing machine to the tumble dryer. Mm. So, not because I was lazy, because I couldn't do it. Mm. So I just went, no, I've had enough. I'm not going to be like this for 40 years. So I went to my GP, who told me that unless I was diabetic or had cancer, they couldn't refer me to a nutritionist because there was no funding.
Yeah, I think we've had the no funding excuse is one all of my clients have heard of.
Yeah. They said, have you tried Slimming World or Weight Watchers? And I felt like throat punching them.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, yeah, I think everyone has.
Yeah.
On or off. And the reason why they are successful is because it doesn't work and people keep going back.
Yeah.
How many times have you spoke to someone, oh, yeah, I'm doing XYZ diet with these people. And they go, oh, right, okay. Oh, yeah, I did it with them before. Right. So why are you having to go back and do it again? Yeah. Obviously, you didn't learn anything. Obviously, they're just taking your money each week.
Yeah.
And it's rinse, repeat, isn't it?
Yeah.
As soon as you come off of it,
Yeah.
It's not about being on or off.
Yeah, the Slimming World diet is one that just doesn't make any sense to me at all. It really doesn't.
It doesn't. It literally, it gave me, and obviously when I went through to going to the obesity hospital, majority of people that were in there under the care of specialists had been through that process and were diagnosed with binge eating disorders.
Yeah.
Because they literally had the understanding and had to unlearn that, no, you cannot eat a great big plate of pasta.
No.
3 times a day, 7 days a week, and it be free. I'm sorry.
It's not encouraging good eating habits.
It's not encouraging good eating habits.
And not eating from the right food groups either. So you're eating way too much carbohydrates.
There's no variety.
There's no fruit, vegetables and stuff like that.
It's not good for your microbiome.
No.
It's just absolutely not.
Yeah.
So I had to unlearn all of that. But the doctor wouldn't refer me. He said, well, I suggest you do something like that. Because the only other option is weight loss surgery, and then you won't be able to eat normally ever again.
Yeah.
Which is the worst advice anyone had ever given anybody, especially coming from a professional.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was a massively uneducated sentence he gave to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately,
it's down to the individual sometimes.
So I struck a deal with him.
Yeah.
I said to him, right, okay, I'll see your Slimming World and I'll raise you a referral.
Yeah.
Right. I went, I will do Slimming World for 12 months and I will record it and I will be back here in 1 year and I will come and see you. If it works, fantastic. Thank you very much. If not, I want you to give me my referral.
Yeah.
And he couldn't say no.
Yeah. Well, no, you've done what he's given you the advice
exactly.
to do, isn't it? So
that's probably my best piece of advice when you go and see a medical professional is whatever their boundaries are, whatever hurdles they put in front of you, say, okay, go away, jump the hurdle, come back and go, now what?
Yeah. You need to put your cards on the table.
Exactly.
Now as well.
So that's what I did. So I went and I did it religiously, absolutely religiously. And I lost and gained the same stone in that year. Like I'd put on 2 pounds, I'd have a pound off,
mm-hmm.
then I'd stay the same and then I'd lose half a pound. You know, to be fair, I probably just went for a really big piss.
Yeah. I mean, most of it's water.
Yeah,
this is the
exactly.
thing. Most of it's water.
And like tracked it and they were like, oh, well, maybe you need to eat a bit more. Maybe you need to do this. Maybe I'm like, what? You're just pulling things out of a hat now, throwing them at me and hoping
it sticks.
So I was like, no. And the whole group therapy thing works for a lot of people to talk about it, to feel like they're not the only ones. I'm not knocking that whatsoever. But to sit and watch people feel guilty for having a glass of wine at a celebration or, you know, having a biscuit with their children at a picnic. Oh, you put on a pound because I had half a sausage roll. No, you didn't, Sharon.
No.
You know, that's not why you put on half a pound.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's because you're not eating all the other things that you need to eat.
Yeah,
your systems aren't working properly.
Yeah, they're not.
So, yeah. So that, apart from irritating me for 12 months...
Yeah.
I had my data.
Yeah.
And I went back to him and I said, there you go. Now what? And he was like, okay, I'll do your referral.
Oh, at least you got what you wanted in the end.
I got my referral and they referred me to the National Centre of Obesity Research at Luton Hon Dunstable Hospital.
Okay, wow.
Because that's where we...
I didn't even know that existed.
No, no one does.
No. So what sort of weight category do you need to be in? Oh, I suppose on the BMI, is it? The BMI scale?
Well, this is the thing. So they say BMI, but like NHS is like outruling that.
Okay.
At the moment.
That's good.
That like with a health condition, in order to be referred for a gastric procedure, you have to have a BMI of 35 or over. If you don't have any medical conditions, then it's 38.
Okay.
Maybe 40.
Yeah.
But it has to affect your daily living.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, unfortunately, most people that are overweight are looking at being pre-diabetic nowadays. And that in itself is a tick in the box, so to speak. And I went there and it's not, a lot of people think that it's a case of you get referred, you say, I want to have a gastric surgery, please. They say, okay, then here we go. We'll sign you up off. It took me 4 years from that referral to get my surgery.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's not a cheap surgery, and I know the NHS wouldn't rush people into it unless they
fully... And it's serious procedure.
Yeah, yeah, it's life changing.
Yeah, like, but it's a dangerous procedure as well. Yeah. Especially if you've got other conditions and you're overweight going into surgery and having general anaesthetic, it's not something that you should take lightly.
Yeah. Did they expect you to lose some weight by yourself before you went into
surgery? Yeah, so the whole procedure was I went in and I had a consultation. Then I was assigned a bariatric nurse who I would have to see every few weeks. I'd have my blood pressure done. They take all my vitals and my weight and stuff. And I had to do a food diary. And then the second time I went back, they put me on a milk diet.
Yeah, I've heard of this
right,
one.
So
yeah.
The reason people do a milk diet is it's a liver-reducing diet.
Oh, okay.
Okay, LRD is what they call it. And it's used for patients that need to have any kind of abdominal surgery because it reduces your liver so that it can be moved out of the way so that surgery can take place.
So people
that
are overweight, they've got an enlarged liver?
It's huge.
Oh, okay.
The majority of people have a fatty liver. It's called fatty liver syndrome.
Right, okay.
A lot of people that aren't overweight can have fatty liver syndrome because it's the internal fats from their diet.
Mm.
So they do this, and I had to do it for 4 weeks.
Just milk?
It was 4.5 pints of semi-skim milk. I was allowed 3 sugar-free jellies a day and a cup of Bovril.
That's commitment. That is full-on commitment, that
I think there's a few reasons why they do it.
Yeah.
I think one is to see that you are dedicated.
Yeah.
Second one is to see if your body can actually physically lose the weight. And the other one is to kind of... dramatically drops your sugar levels.
Okay.
So if you've got a diet that's high in fat, high in sugar, it will reset that system.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But it should only ever be done under the supervision of a professional.
Yeah.
Like, because the side effects to that
can be
really bad. And I was monitored really closely while I was doing that.
Yeah.
So, and that was, because you have to do that at the end. So before your surgery, I had to do that for 2 weeks before my surgery.
Okay.
But even on that, I only lost 6 pounds.
So you'd expect to lose so much more, right, from that?
Yeah.
But your systems just weren't working at all.
And I didn't have a diet high in fats or sugars.
No.
So I didn't have that sugary, craving-y thing. So if, for example, you had someone that had a horrendous diet and they did that, they'd lose loads.
Yeah.
Because they're no longer eating processed foods. Well, I went from eating fairly well to just having milk.
Yeah.
And apparently I smelt funny towards the end of it.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
Like, you know when you've got a newborn baby and you smell their head?
That milk smell.
Yeah, yes.
I literally smelled like that.
I smelled like milk, like, which was a
like
bit
baby
weird.
Baby milk, yeah. Nice. Yeah.
That was hard. It was hard.
Yeah,
really hard.
No, I mean, it sounds like, I mean, 4 years of going, you know, going through all that just shows how desperate and how committed you were to having a better life.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people think you just go to the NHS and you go, oh, I want a gastric band, and they just go, it's very difficult to get. It's very easy to get it abroad now privately, but
it is very easy.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just about the diet that I had the support with.
Mm.
Like, the NHS provided me with like a psychologist.
Okay.
So that I
had to go through like therapy.
Yeah, to go
and that,
through
yeah.
therapy to ask about any issues that I had with food or what my triggers might have been. But I wasn't really an overeater.
Yeah.
If anything, I was an undereater.
Yeah. And undereating is just as damaging as overeating as well.
Like, and it was not eating enough. Yeah. Was what probably caused a lot of my weight gain because my systems weren't working properly. My body was literally hardly having enough to function at rest.
Yeah.
So I definitely didn't have the energy to try and do anything.
Yeah, people
and then
do
I
need
couldn't
to realise that it's not just weight gain isn't just because everyone's being greedy. It can be, like, I've got clients that only eat in the evening. And they'll have the wrong foods very late at night and they're overweight and they actually give them a diet plan. They go, oh my God, I'm going to eat all this food. I'm going to get fat.
I found that with my clients. Like, oh my God, I can't eat that much.
You know, no, that's how much you should be eating. And when you start eating that, your systems start working and then your hormone levels are going to balance and you're actually going to start losing weight and feeling better.
It. That's the thing. You know, they provided me with all this information and then they said, right, okay, we want you to try this diet. And then we wanted you to try this one because they wanted to see if I had any food intolerances. Mm. They wanted to see if there was something that was triggering all of this, which was really helpful. You don't get that if you go private.
No.
Not if you just go, oh, I'm just going to pay for it.
Yeah.
And then it was deciding which kind of weight loss surgery was going to be right for me.
Yeah. So which one is it you went
so
for?
So I had a bypass.
Bypass.
So that is where my stomach has been made into like a small pouch, probably about that big.
Okay.
And it's the lower intestine goes straight from my stomach, straight into my lower intestine. So okay. The part that absorbs all the fat and nutrients and stuff is bypassed completely.
Right.
So I have to take lifelong daily multivitamin and mineral complex. Mm. I have to make sure that my protein levels are high.
Yeah.
I have to make sure I'm hydrated and stuff.
So what's the difference between the sleeve and the bypass?
So the sleeve is where everything else from like the stomach down is all intact. Okay. None of that is touched. And the stomach is made into like a banana-shaped funnel, basically.
Uh-huh.
So a sleeve will restrict the amount you can eat at any one time.
Okay.
And so that's kind of people that used to eat a lot, it's very helpful for.
Okay.
Whereas mine, it helps with, obviously I can't eat as much all in one go.
Yeah.
But it's the process of digestion is a lot quicker.
Okay.
And my body doesn't absorb the fat from food because it bypasses that bit.
Bypass that, okay.
There are side effects.
Yeah.
Yeah, massive side effects. Yeah. So if I have anything that is too fatty or too oily and it goes directly straight into my lower intestine, then I am literally on the toilet for hours within 20
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, I've heard this.
It's awful.
Yeah. One of my friends
it's
actually
like acid.
Had... I think she had the same as you. She was obese and she was in hospital for about 3 weeks after she had the bypass because she kept eating stuff she weren't meant to eat because obviously our old habits hadn't changed. Mm-hmm. And she said, I want to die. She said, I'm just in so much pain. She goes, and I don't want to do this. She goes, I don't know why. She regretted the surgery because at that point she'd regretted the surgery because she hadn't sorted the habits out. And she'd caused herself so much pain and she was like, I just want to eat my food. Like she'd missed that,
yeah.
That because she had a bad diet. That's why she was a big girl. She was like, I miss that socialising. I miss that like enjoyment from food. She was just really, really depressed. She went to a really dark place. So the side effects, that they are massive. Now she's thriving. You know, she's had the therapy now post thing. But I think, yeah, like you say, having the psychologist or having someone before you go for the operation is really important because you're going to change.
So it's just because you have this psychologist, you have to be completely honest with them because there may be issues that they want to address with you. It doesn't mean to say that you won't get your surgery. It just means that they will address those issues before they refer you on for it. Mm. And you just have to take it with both hands because that kind of therapy doesn't come cheap and it certainly doesn't come around very often.
No.
And then they clear you for it and, yeah, you see the anaesthetist and off you go. But yeah, with the bypass, I literally stuck to everything religiously. You know, they tell you not to drink for at least like alcohol for at least 12 months. Two reasons, really. One, you're still healing internally. And secondly, your body, especially with a bypass, it processes the alcohol really quickly. So if I was to have one glass of wine, like a normal standard pub measure, that will hit my liver quickly.
Yeah.
It will hit my stomach
cheap
really
date.
Far. I'm really cheap date.
Yeah.
Like one glass of wine, it's like I've done a bottle.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
But in the same breath, I sober up really quickly as well because it's gone.
Ah, you like literally pass it through so quick. Yeah.
But oh, it's like, you know, foods and stuff. Like I love salmon.
Yeah.
I can't eat it anymore.
Oh, because of the fats.
Because it's quite an oily fish, even though they're good fats.
Yeah.
I can't stomach them, which I hate because I really love salmon.
Yeah. You have to get a scampi fried. It's not salmon. What about scampi?
I can't eat any fish.
No, you cannot.
No, I used to love fish.
Yeah.
I can have prawns, but no.
That's the thing. You can't take it lightly because it's such a big surgery and it does change, you know, what you can do post-surgery, but... For you, I mean, it's been life-changing, right?
Oh, it's been completely life-changing.
In a positive.
You know, and that doctor saying to me, if you have this, then you'll never be able to eat again, you'll be on liquid diet. That was the worst information he ever gave me.
Yeah.
You are for about 8 to 12 weeks.
Yeah.
It's like weaning a baby. You've got a new digestive system. You've got to wait for it to heal. You've got to introduce food slowly.
Did you find that you were hungry post-surgery or were you...
No.
No. So, as much to say you're only on a liquid diet, you're not really... Because you're not, like, craving it much anyway.
No, not at all. No. And... I probably eat more now than I ever did before my bypass.
Yeah.
I have to eat little and often and I definitely eat better now.
Yeah. make better choices.
Yeah, better choices. Be more because informed I have as well. To be. I have to be aware of what I'm eating because, yeah. like, the side effects, the ramifications of that.
Yeah. How long has it been since you had the surgery?
August 2019.
Okay, so five years. Mm. And what was the recovery like?
With my fibro, it kicked off a flare up.
Okay.
But, like, it's weird because you only have, like I've said about the pain pathway, and it's open all the time, the most intensive pain will take over, right? So when I've had surgeries, that's really quite a painful thing. Yeah. So that kind of puts a lid on my fibro pain because it's like, no, you're not strong enough. This pain is stronger. We'll deal with that. Yeah. So I could take painkillers and it was functional.
Yeah.
I think healing process for internals is probably... It was a good 12 weeks before I could have solid food.
Yeah.
And then it's trial and error. But moving around and stuff, probably about 8 weeks. I, because of my weight and because I was immobile anyway, I probably spent about 2 weeks where I'd be mostly in bed, but I'd get up and move around because of, like, risk of blood clot and stuff. Yeah. But I was exhausted and I'd go back to bed again.
Yeah.
It's not just a nip over to some foreign country, have it, come back, have a week off work and crack on.
No. I mean, at that point as well, when you've had the weight loss, you've had the bypass, but you're still obviously carrying that weight at that point.
Yeah, because
you
haven't lost it. Still carrying it at that point, yeah.
Yeah. So how fast did the weight come off once you've had the surgery?
Blimey. Probably, it was quite quick. I think the sleeve is a faster process.
Okay.
Which personally wasn't for me because that has its own ramifications. If you lose weight far too quickly, then you end up with, like, hair loss. You could end up with, like, your skin drying out, like, nails breaking, teeth really? Crumbling. Yeah, because you're like, you're not losing it too anything. Quickly.
Yeah.
But it was, I'd say within the first 12 weeks, I'd probably lost about 2.5 stone.
Wow.
And then it kind of plateaus out a little bit. And then it moves on and then it plateaus out a little bit and then you lose a bit more. And then the last, probably does it about 2 years and then it starts to ease off a little bit and then you maintain it.
Yeah.
So I lost just over 10 stone in total.
In 2 years?
Yeah, about 2.5 years.
Jeez, that's a whole person.
It's a whole person. Mm. It's a whole person. But I didn't just do it with the weight loss surgery and people think it's a magic thing. Oh yeah. Yeah, I'll have this and it'll work and it'll come off and I'll be right again, because it's not, it's just a tool.
Yeah.
And that tool stops working after a certain period of time and then you have to implement everything that you've learned in order to carry on.
You can put the weight back on, yeah, right? Yeah. If you don't,
you can stretch
it back out. Yeah. Yeah. So if you don't implement those changes, then you can just going to reverse all the work that you've done anyway.
And you have to listen to your body.
Yeah.
You have to listen to it. Like when you're eating, you have to go, oh, I really want the rest of that, but actually I'm full.
Yeah.
Whereas beforehand, I'd go, I really want that because that's really nice. Yeah. And I'd just stuff it in and then go, ooh, into a carb coma for like the next 2 hours. Whereas now, if I was to eat it, I'd be like, ooh, no, I can't have that.
You know, it's got so many more implications as well.
And it like sits here.
Yeah.
And it literally feels like
reflux.
And you can feel it going down and you're like, oh, I've had too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I, you know, I used exercise as well though.
Yeah. So how quickly was it when you started to get back into the exercising after you'd done the surgery?
So I actually did it before I did the surgery.
Okay.
So going back to after I decided that I was going to do all of this, and they kept saying to me, you need to do more exercise. No one ever told me how to do it safely for me. I want to point that out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They always tell you to do it. They never tell you how to do it for you, because what might be right for you wouldn't be right for me. So I decided to do a little bit of research. And I asked to be referred to the physiotherapist at the hospital. So they referred me. I was really lucky I got a referral. And this was on the days where you could actually see a physiotherapist and they didn't just talk to you on the phone and give you a sheet of exercises.
Yeah.
So I went to see them and I was very lucky in the fact that the physio I saw had done a paper in their degree on fibromyalgia.
Oh, okay.
It was just pure fluke.
Yeah, just luck of the gods.
And I was talking to them and they explained to me, in layman's terms, what was happening in my body. And they said to me, it's like you've got a car alarm going off because the car thinks it's being broken into, but it's not.
Right.
But the alarm's going out.
The signals are going off.
Signals are going off. And I was like, it clicked in my head. I was like, So he went, whatever you're doing, you're not going to injure yourself just because it's hurting you.
Right, okay.
And that flicked a switch.
Yeah.
Because the rheumatologist has said to me, I don't suggest you do much exercise, and swimming will be out for a little while because you're too hypermobile. You could risk of dislocation. So they basically said to me, and I understood that, as you really shouldn't exercise because of your conditions.
Yeah.
How damaging was that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that little bit of advice just,
changes everything. It changed everything. Yeah. So when they said that to me, they said, oh, actually, you can, you're eligible for hydrotherapy.
Which is water therapy?
Water in exercise, exercise in water, right? And just gentle movements. So I was like, oh, that's fantastic. So they went off. And they come back and they went, we're really sorry. I was like, what's the matter? I said, unfortunately, you're over the weight restriction for the hoist in case we need to get you out in an emergency, so you can't have the therapy.
Oh, no.
So the weight was, I think it was 20 stone and I was 24 stone at the time.
Oh, no.
So the one therapy that could have helped me lose weight was stopping me. I wasn't allowed it because I was overweight.
Too big.
So again, it's another vicious cycle.
Yeah.
And it just seemed that every time I tried to do something, the door was shutting in front of me.
Yeah.
And no one was there to help me. So I was like, right, okay, I have got to take my own responsibility for this. And I joined it was DW at the time. It's down the gym with the pool down by Asda.
Yeah, I know you mean. Yeah.
And... Now, gym anxiety is a massive thing that so many people have.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. Yeah,
honestly, imagine me. I mean, it's all documented, like, on my Facebook.
Yeah.
Like, I've purposefully documented it. And
I've seen some of the videos, actually. Yeah.
I went into the changing rooms, and I made sure that there was no... I sent my husband in first to tell me if there was anyone in the pool. And he was like, there's no one in the pool. I was like, all right. It took me half an hour to get changed. One, because I needed his help to help me get changed. And because then I sat in the changing rooms crying, thinking, I don't know if I can do this. Bearing in mind, I'm on crutches, right? So I managed to get myself to the pool. My husband helps me into the water. And I was like, right, I'm here now. I've got to do something. So I just walked a width.
Yeah.
And I was fucked.
I bet.
I was knackered. So I sat there for another 10 minutes and then I walked the width back. I got out. It took me nearly 40 minutes to get dried and changed. I went home. I slept the rest of the day and that put me in bed for 2 days.
Yeah.
But when I got better again, I went back and I did it again.
Yeah. Just little baby steps, basically. Baby steps. Yeah.
And it was movement. The physio had given me some movements to do and they said, if you can do it in water, it'll be better for you.
It's not weight bearing, is it?
Not weight bearing. Yeah. So that's what I did.
Yeah.
And I just did a bit more and I did more because I thought if I'm going to have a major surgery, I need to be in the best physical health I possibly can be in at this time for me. You know, I'm not going to be an athlete.
No.
You know, I'm not going to be super fit. I don't plan on running marathons, but I need to get as good as I can get.
Yeah.
Beforehand, not wait till afterwards.
Yeah.
Because that gives you, one, a better chance of survival of the surgery because it is very dangerous, and it gives you a better option of recovery for going through all these things, like, afterwards. So I was like, right, I'm going to do that. So that's what I did. Right the way up from the, I think it was the January, February time, all the way through till the August when my surgery date came through. I did that.
Yeah.
And then after about 4 months, my husband said to me, why don't you come in the gym with me? I was like, oh, I definitely can do that. Yeah. He's like, you've been doing really well. Just do some banded movements. So I was like, okay. So put my big girl pants on.
Yeah.
And he came with me and we went, like, literally, it was like 20 minutes before closing. There was no one there.
Yeah, best time to go.
And I was literally, like, just doing some banded movements that my physio had shown me. And again, I was absolutely knackered.
Yeah.
But a couple of days later, I did it again. Before I knew it, I was going twice a week, just doing those. And then he was like, you know, then my surgery came up and I did that. And then as soon as I was recovered from my surgery, I did the same thing again. I started at the beginning by going in the water.
Yeah.
And then I just built it up again.
Yeah. That's a good thing. You've made a point of saying that, the understanding that you're not going to be able to go running on the treadmill and having that.
No.
and actually having that option to think, actually, I can, this is how I can do it, giving a pathway to into getting better.
That's it.
Because I do, you know, obviously, when you're looking, if you're, you know, if you're really, really overweight and you're thinking about going to the gym, going on a spin bike, it's not going
to
happen.
Well, this is it. What is the first thing people think when they say, oh, I need to go to the gym? Oh, I need to do 20 minutes on a treadmill or a cross trainer?
Literally.
Or,
literally.
When
so
you're carrying
more,
probably more than 2 or 3 stone in weight, the impact that has on your body is immense.
Yeah. And joints and
that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And your joints, and especially like where I'm, you know, I'm hypermobile. It's not good for my joints.
Yeah,
because they're so unstable that it's all I'm going to do is impact that, like literally impact my joints all the time.
Yeah.
So you know, lifting weight and moving things is what helps me build my muscular strength now, and combats my hypermobility because my muscles are now doing the jobs of my tendons because that's a whole different condition.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you've made your journey from doing really, really basic, you know, walking in the water, bounded movements, to now doing your strength training and stuff. And obviously now you're actually a coach yourself now, which to help people.
I am. So when I was looking for somebody, when I got to the stage where I was like, right, okay, I'm confident, a bit more confident in myself. I need some professional help, right? Mm. So I looked around for some PTs to see if I could get somebody that could help me that would understand my conditions, or had even heard of my conditions. And that was the first barrier.
Was
trying to find someone to say, you know, when you fill in your PARQ form and you're like, you know, do you have any health conditions, taking medication? Yeah. Oh, what's that then?
Yeah.
I was like, well, it's this. It affects me these ways that we've explained. And, oh, I don't know much about that. I was like, maybe you're not the person for me. Or if I said I've got hypermobility, they're like, well, what's that then? You're a bit flexible. I went, no, I'm not a bit flexible. I'm too flexible.
Yeah.
So range of motion, my range of motion is huge. And what I actually need to do is restrict my range of motion, not make myself more flexible. As a PT, that's like, you're doing the opposite of what most people need.
Yeah.
And
so you need like a level 4 coach sort of thing.
Well,
right?
This is the thing. So I couldn't find the person that I needed, or I thought I found a few people and they're very good at what they do. Don't get me wrong. But it wasn't when I was going, actually, that's really painful. And they're just, oh, come on, you can do it, which is great.
Mm.
But I wasn't doing it because I was lazy.
To be fair, as a PT, we're taught to do to most people.
I couldn't do it because my fibro might be flaring up.
And
my muscle is actually on fire, not because of what I've been doing, but because it's just on fire.
Yeah.
So I needed someone that would understand that I might need a longer recovery period in between things. I might need, you know, it might take me longer to get to where I need to be. It's not going to be a 6-week shred or... You know, it's a lifestyle change I'm looking for. So I was like, I can't find anyone that understands what I'm doing. So I was like, right, I'd had a bit of a previous background, like in adventure training and instruction and stuff. So I looked out and I was like, right, I'm just going to have to help myself. So I put myself through my level 3 PT course. I already had my anatomy and physiology, already understood about all these different things. I was like, right, let me see if I can help myself by doing it. So that's why I did it, to refresh myself. And then obviously I'm looking, and anyone that's like a level 3 PT should know that if you get people with certain conditions that are outside the range of normal, you need to refer on because it's not your understanding, your level of expertise. And then I realised that there is only 10% of PTs in the country that have an exercise referral therapy qualification, which is what I needed. I needed to find someone that did that, and I didn't know anybody. So I did that.
Yeah.
So that
you made you who you needed.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So you needed you.
I needed me, so I made me.
Yeah.
And then that now means that I can work with people with a range of conditions.
Yeah.
Understand how their medication affects their condition, how exercise affects their condition and the medication and vice versa. Because it's, you know, there are some people that if you're on a type of medication, you can't do certain exercises because you could pass out. You could, you know, you might not feel the pain you're doing. You might not be able to relate to these things, or it could set you off once you get home, you know? So, yeah, I became that person.
It's a lot more in depth, isn't it? Than just a regular person training and coaching.
You know, I could take on clients left, right and centre that just want to get ready for summer and just want to be a bit fitter.
Hot girl summer.
And you know.
My clients are hot girl summer.
I could do that. I could do that and I could fill my books up like day in, day out.
Yeah.
But I don't. Work with people that have existing medical conditions that are or might be have a few niggles from an injury or who are looking to have surgery or recovery from surgery, because they want to maintain or improve their daily living.
Yeah.
Because being able to walk up the set of stairs in one go was life-changing for me. And I didn't do that overnight. That was at least a 6 to 8 month process.
Yeah.
And I think once you realise that you're doing these things to be able to function as a person, to reduce your medication, to manage your symptoms, because
to get your life back, I suppose.
When you've got these diagnoses, they're not going to go away.
No.
And if you don't maintain a certain level of strength and fitness, you will have the worst of symptoms.
Yeah.
So that's completely where I'm at. Right.
Yeah.
So.
And the good thing is as well is obviously you having the experience with having lived with the conditions and similar, you know, other medications and going through surgeries and recoveries and obesity. You're not just reading it from a textbook.
No. And it's the mental side of it as well. Like when you have these physical conditions, the mental trauma.
Mm. I think that's the worst bit, to be fair.
That can give you that realisation that you're like, I could be like this forever. And you have to go through a grieving process for who you were before diagnosis.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big thing that I do with a lot of my clients is I always say to them when I have like I offer a 30-minute free consultation and we have a chat, and I think if I don't make you cry in that 30 minutes or just after it, you've not been honest with me.
Right.
Because I really make them reflect on who they used to be.
Where they want to get back to.
Where they want to get, or not even get back to. It's knowing what you used to do and who you used to be, recognising and accepting where you are and what's got you there. And then once you've done that, only then can you move forward and go, actually, my priorities are different now. I'm not worried about wearing a size 10 pair of shorts in the summer. I just want to be able to go for a really long walk.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And when you start doing it for health reasons and mental health reasons and to be physically strong, weight loss becomes a side effect of that.
Mm. That's so true, yeah. You know,
it does. I think when you have weight loss as the main focus, it's however much you feel that it's your priority, it's never as important.
No. No, there's a lot of... it's very short-lived, a little bit of weight loss. It's the rest of it. You can lose your weight and you can still feel like absolute crap, even without conditions and stuff. But, you know, if you're not well within, then...
Well, then you end up heading towards all these conditions, you know. And as a woman in my 40s, I'm now thinking about not necessarily my weight, but osteoporosis, you know. I'm thinking of like perimenopause
now,
thinking about all these other things.
Being a woman sucks.
If I don't start doing it now, I'm going to have to start trying to combat the symptoms of these things later. And that's so much harder.
Yeah. And it's great having that education now and knowing that, you can prevent these symptoms before they start rather than dealing with that mindset that we all seem to have. We deal with it once we've gone through the process of having all the symptoms and stuff. Yeah. So, it's definitely a good way to look. Now you made me think about it.
Excellent.
I have to come see you for some sessions.
You know, so it's like prevention is better than cure. Because if you're trying to do it after the event, you're constantly chasing.
Yeah. Back to where you were.
If you've got the slightest inkling that something's not quite right, go and see the medical professionals, get as much education as you can and, you know...
And do your own research.
Come and see people like me and you, you know, because people think that private healthcare is something that costs hundreds and hundreds of thousands of pounds, but we're private healthcare, you know. Physical trainers are private healthcare. Physiotherapists are private healthcare. Sports massage therapists, you know, breathing technique, all of these is private healthcare. And sometimes you can have a session for as little as like 30 quid.
Yeah.
Once a month.
And it can just be literally just such an informative hour of your life just to give you some tools and free tools as well.
Yeah.
Tools you can do at home, things you can do out with the kids, like just like things like that are going to change your well-being and
exactly
how you feel.
It's like my process with my clients is not, you need to stay with me forever, because if you stay with me forever, then I'm not doing my job, to be fair. You know? You come to see me.
I only have an attention span for about 6 to 8 weeks, so.
It's like, you come and see me, I teach you what you need to know.
Yeah.
So I can get you to the point where you're confident, you can go away, and maybe you might have a program from me once a month.
Yeah.
You know, so that's my end goal, is to be able to program you to be able to go anywhere you want to go, do your program, it be progressive to keep you where you are and maintain your health.
Yeah.
That's my aim.
Yeah.
So it's not a long-term expense that you're going to have to pay for 2 or 3 sessions a week. Exactly. You know, some people can't even get out of their home. So
health is wealth. And so investing yourself in is absolutely really important. I mean, what we're talking about, one Nando's a month to have one session.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a massive ask, is it?
No.
Or how many of these? I mean, how much is a coffee these days? Well, this a fiver, isn't
like,
it?
Yeah, it's like £7,
that's like,
I think.
15 minutes. That's a 15-minute consultation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, 100%. Well, thank you so much for coming.
You're welcome.
I'm going to put Lorraine's stuff in the YouTube videos and on our socials as well. So reach out, obviously. Lorraine's really, really, really such a lovely person to talk to. Really down to earth, speaking from experience.
Thank you.
You haven't got anything to be worried or embarrassed about. She's such an open person. So I really encourage you, if you're in a really bad place at the moment and you need someone to sort of guide you, it's a free 30-minute consultation. You're not at any loss to reach out. So do it today. And thanks very much today.
You're very welcome.
All right. Thanks for the coffee as well. It's very nice.
You're welcome. Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you.